So at Truve, one of the things we do is we actually say the problem is not getting into college. The problem is getting out of college. And so the problem of getting into college, societally, we tend to think that, that the hardest thing about American college is getting into Harvard, getting into Stanford, right, the Ivy League. Those the sort of 80-20 rule applies there because there are 20 schools that dominate 80% of the attention that we all think about college.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kieran Kuritala. I'm your host for Illuminated Podcast. We have been extremely pleased to feature many entrepreneurs and leaders of higher education over the years. However, today I have a treat for you. I have Dave Hurwit. Dave is an innovator. Over the course of his career, he's led the development and launch of new products and services from toothpicks to wind turbines that have generated over $1 billion in sales. If you have a large front-loading washing machine in your house, that was Dave and his team at Whirlpool. They have re-envisioned the traditional small European washer for the US market and took front loaders from 1% of the market to 50% today, saving billions of dollars in electricity and water consumption in the process. Dave has lived and worked around the world and now based in Burlington, Vermont, with his wife and two golden retrievers. Their three kids have now graduated from college, but it was his experience with them on their college journeys that have started his innovator's brain cranking on what became Truve. We'll talk all about it on the episode. Having worked in admissions through grad school, Dave was amazed by how little technology and internet have impacted the college search and admissions process. Even more, he was dismayed to discover how often students were transferring or dropping out altogether. So Dave, welcome to Illuminated Podcast.
Thank you, Kieran. It's great to be here.
You are a wealth of knowledge, and I love this idea that you have used your innovative skills of selling $1 billion in different verticals, including toothpicks, wind turbines, and washing machines, and you are using it for higher education. But before we get into what you're doing, let's talk about your kids who have graduated from college and what they went through getting into the colleges of choice or not getting into the college of choice, and how that has picked your innovator's mind to build Truve.
Sure. Yeah, I have, as you mentioned in the intro, I have three children. They're children to me. They're no longer children in the conventional sense. They're 24, 26, and 28. Mm-hmm. When the 28-year-old was looking at colleges, you know, we were fortunate enough to be able to hire a private admissions counselor for her. Had a pretty good guidance counselor at her public high school as well. And so we felt that we had really done our homework and created the right list. And she and I headed off on the first college trip. I think it was probably the summer of going to her junior year. And we drove all the way out in the middle of New York State and got out to this little town and went to the school. And she said, "Dad, don't even get out of the car. Forget about it. This is not going to happen." And I said, "But this is the number one school on your list. It's exactly what you asked for." And she just said, no, it misses this, this, and this. And it was obviously the evolution of a 17-year-old's thinking about this was part of this. But it was also a lack of technology that was helpful in discovering the right fit for her. And, right, you know, it that night, I made her get out of the car. We went on the tour. It was helpful. We had good conversation. We got back in the car and I said, "Okay, look, you control the Spotify. You find, you know, something you want to listen to. I'm going to jump on Open Table and find us a place to go to dinner tonight and we can talk all this through." And it occurred to me that the technology that would match her song preference on Spotify and the technology would match my dinner choice, my restaurant choice in this new little town we'd never been to, but it knew my pattern of what I liked and didn't like.
Sure.
That matching technology was going to be significantly more sophisticated than the conventional way in which most teenagers create a list of colleges that they think might be good for them. And obviously the level of expense of a four-year or more college, a bachelor's degree, is significantly higher than dinner.
Right.
And so that's sort of where the genesis was. And all four of the kids ended up, all three of the kids ended up graduating from school. Two of them went and stayed at the same schools. One, the older one, actually transferred after 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of fit really was an evolution for me, thinking about what might be the best technologies that are being used in other industries in order to help match users and with new products, new services. And it didn't take long to sort of come up with this concept of using that same core technology of the experienced outcome that you're looking for, modeled so that you can understand it and fit to it in a way that takes out some of that teenager insecurity and lack of self-awareness. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, because I think there's two parts to this, and I've talked about it on different with all different entrepreneurs and innovators also, where like Spotify playlist or Amazon recommended groceries list, or Amazon knows what electronics you would like, what groceries you would like. Spotify knows what music you would like, you like, and obviously, just like you said, OpenTable knows which type of restaurants you choose. And it's very, very interesting that they know all of this with so little information. In that, you know, they only listen to your history and know your age and probably know your ethnicity based on your preferences, and that's about it. But when it comes to college admissions, both from applicant side and the college side, they have so much more information. They know, most colleges know your social security number, know your date of birth, know your ethnicity, race, immigration status, and yet their ability to match, forget about applicants matching to colleges matching themselves to say, these are the applicants that are best fit to get admitted, and these are the students that are best fitted to get admitted and graduated. These are the students that are best fitted to get admitted and not accept our admissions. And these are the students that are potentially going to be admitted, but will not graduate. They have all this information, all this data, but they choose not to use this data to come up with an actionable intelligence, or they are not looking at it. I don't understand it. So let's talk about the colleges part of the problem, because the contrast I'm trying to drive is Amazon or Tabletop and OpenTable and others have so little information and they can give actionable intelligence to you as a consumer, but colleges have so much more information and they provide no actionable intelligence to themselves. Forget about an applicant. Why is that?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. Number one, there's actually a fair amount of technology that enrollment officers, admissions officers are using today in order to target people who will apply and to drive application numbers. Because that's part of the issue, is that most schools, from a management structure, the responsibility for creating new enrollment and new net tuition revenue lies in the enrollment office. What happens downstream from once they're on campus is no longer the responsibility of most admissions people. Now, obviously they're good people. They care about the outcomes. They don't want to just bring in the wrong people. They're doing their best. Mm-hmm. But the focus has become somewhat myopically on enrollment statistics. The sort of the industry term, and pardon the sort of crude nature, but it's butts in seats. Can I put butts in seats, right? And net tuition revenue, you know, my gross tuition minus the discount offered to the student as an inducement to come. And those are the two key performance indicators that most enrollment people are focused on. And so at Truv, one of the things we do is we actually say the problem is not getting into college. The problem is getting out of college. And so the problem of getting into college, societally, we tend to think that the hardest thing about American college is getting into Harvard, getting into Stanford, the Ivy League. Those sort of the 80-20 rule applies there, because there are 20 schools that dominate 80% of the attention that we all think of about college. And truthfully, the business model at Harvard is totally unrelated to the business model at 90% of other colleges.
Yep.
And so the national average, about the acceptance rate is about 75%. So kids are getting into most of the schools where they apply. The national four-year graduation rate is 45%. Right. Mm-hmm. So almost twice as hard to get out as it is to get in. And so from my perspective, that's the problem we're solving. And part of the disconnect that you just identified so well is that enrollment offices are trying to solve the wrong problem. They're trying to solve, how do we get the kids to apply? How do we get them to enroll? And then we let the rest of the team at our school solve for the other part. And one of the insights that I think that Truv is bringing to this is that focus on the end result. You know, what Amazon doesn't care about is you starting the song. The Amazon or Spotify doesn't care about you starting a song. They care about you sort of listening to the whole song and enjoying it and wanting to stay. And so the goal of college is the degree. And if that's the case, then the largest part of every school are the alumni. They're the people that have come and stayed and succeeded. And mm-hmm. So all we're doing is applying data science to that and saying, we're going to model success in your culture, which is graduation and alumni engagement success, in order to use that as a filter to find the people in the pool most likely to end, you know, at that same place, not just enrolling, because enrollment happens when you're finding graduation. Right.
No, I agree totally, because there's two parts to this. One is some admissions teams, like you talked about the Harvard and Stanford, they want to run up the application number so that they can say, we are 0.01% acceptance rate, because guess what? The more selective it is, more expensive it can be, or more prestigious the college is, right? If they are admitting like one out of the 10,000 students, they must be really good. So that's one of their thing. That's why they blanket every mailbox with their brochures or marketing material. On the other hand, we have, you know, we'll just take some rural schools in Louisiana that they're saying, you know, we'll just accept whatever we get and we'll deal with, you know, them graduating or not later. Mm-hmm. Because for them, it's survival, if you will. So it's a, but however, if Harvard is more selective and say, you know, we don't need 100,000 applicants this year, we can just target the 15,000 applicants that we absolutely want to accept and only accept them by giving a score, if you will, saying, you know, don't waste your $50 on an admissions process, apply somewhere else. It'd be nice, right? And Harvard reduces that. And certainly that opens up the pool for other colleges to do the same. Ideally, I would like for a system where colleges can be colleges that are super Ivy League to be more selective on whom they let us apply. And also the colleges that are super open also to be more selective and say, yes, we can let you admit, but you need to get better at your math. You need to increase your literary skills for you to graduate. If the student knows it better, it's like, for example, the Amazon example, if it is like you're binding a furniture, it says assembly required or mm-hmm. medium assembly required or no assembly required. I would like to know that when I get admitted, instead of saying, yeah, I got admission, that's great.
You know, Karen, if you step back and say, well, the system that we have today is almost 400 years old, right? Harvard admitted their first student in 1637. Mm-hmm. It was a kid named Ben Woodbridge. And Ben, he became the very first college graduate in the United States in 1642. And I don't know this specifically, but my assumption is Ben wrote to Harvard and he said, I would love to come to your school. This is what I've studied. These are my grades. This is my teacher recommendation. Here's a little bit about me. That's essentially what we do today, right? And over time, every school, understandably, was creating their own pool of applicants. Now, there is an ocean of applicants, and it's divided into about 4,000 different little pools, which is highly inefficient. And if you think about the amount of money that's wasted and the amount of the lack of intelligence that's applied to, you know, what you were talking about before, about what you know about students, what students know about schools, it is all built on essentially 17th century thinking and technology. And so that's part of the approach that we're taking, is to step back from this and say, mm-hmm. the networking effect of being able to really get your unique culture, your DNA out there to the point where every prospect in the market, and there are 3.7 million high school seniors in the US mm-hmm. alone, and another million students outside the US who want to come to the US. Sure. So they're a very large set of students, but most schools, and most schools are small, right? They're 1,000, 2,000 students, and they might receive 3,000, 5,000 applications. 5,000 applications out of nearly 5 million prospective students is a very tiny slice of the market. And so everyone is operating from these microscopic slices, where I think if we were to design the system from scratch today, we'd say, let's not fish in the pond, let's fish in the ocean, and let's find a way for us to assess all of the fish in the ocean against our unique DNA, so that at the beginning of the admissions process, not at the end after you've applied, but at the beginning, you can find the schools where you have the highest probability of coming, staying, succeeding, and not just for graduation success, but to actually become an engaged alum.
Right.
It's the gold standard, right?
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because I think there's two parts of this story that is equally compelling, or equally, probably one side is more compelling, is the applicant's journey. Because on one hand, colleges want to, no matter what you tell them, they're only focused on increasing their application pool or increasing their admit pool, like enrolled students. I think that at least the admissions directors, that's all they focus on. You know, they can't take responsibility of students graduating, at least the way it's currently designed. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, most the head of enrollment is typically in the cabinet, right? They report right to the president. The president obviously cares as much about an alumni engagement and graduation rate as they do admissions rate. And they segregate for their team as they should to say, hey, enrollment person, you're responsible for the front end. But if there was a way for that person to say, I'm actually going to enroll more future graduates instead of just more freshmen.
Right.
That perspective, and that's got to be backed up with, with the sort of job evaluation that comes with it. I've had multiple enrollment heads say to me, not confidentially, but just sort of say, look, the reality is I get hired and fired based on my ability to procure the next class.
Right.
No enrollment person has ever been fired, to my knowledge, because the president walks in and says, we're not graduating enough of the kids you're giving us. You're out. They just don't have the ability to affect that until now.
Right, exactly. So I think the other part of this is, sure, like the way colleges are structured, that doesn't let them evolve. Let's assume that that doesn't change. But we can still influence change by making the applicants understand which colleges can serve them better, right? Because I think that's where TRUE is really powerful, because when you look at platforms, students apply kind of indiscriminately. Some people, like my daughter, and we went through the same exercise with Varun, my son, when he started applying. I said, let's take three schools that are pie in the sky, where there's a very little chance of you getting in, but we still want to apply because we don't want to feel like we did not give it a fair chance. Again, he's a stellar student, so I don't even want to I would have thought that every school should have been have accepted him. And
right? They should take him.
And he's a good student. He's not just my kid. Like, it's just amazing. So, but still, we just said, we don't know. We don't know who else is applying. So we'll put them as pie in the sky. Second is, we'll have, out of the 10 schools we apply, about 40% will be safe schools where you have over 80% of chance of getting in. Let's make sure we apply. And then there's remaining 3 to 4 schools that are in the middle, where there might be a little bit of a reach, but they're not too far of the reach. So we went through that, but we only went through it, even though I've been involved with education by talking to people like you, we only looked at it very superficially, in that, what is their US News ranking? What is their acceptance rate? What is their, we did not even look at graduation rate.
But you were setting the goal, understandably, and it's not, right, it's important. But your goal was, how can I get my son into school?
Right.
Right. And that's that.
Into the best school we can get him in. That's the idea.
So let's come back and talk about what best means. But that idea that you're a smart guy and process oriented, and you looked at it and said, okay, the problem we're trying to solve here is, how do I get him into school? And then what's the best school? And so getting into school is important.
Easy,
It's not. I mean, it's not easy for those top three schools that I'm sure you identified, just based on math, right? The number of people applying. But most parents do not ask any questions specifically of enrollment professionals about what's your graduation rate and what's your alumni engagement rate and what's your job placement rate, what's your transfer rate, your retention rate over 1 year, 2 year period. Those kind of things, of course, we care about the long-term effect, but we are so focused on this, they have to get into the best school. And so I would suggest to most people that they need to pick their head up a little bit and say, don't worry about getting in. Come at that later. Think about, where is my son or daughter most likely to go and be happy
and successful?
In the success of outcome of, they're going to spend their time there, they're going to get their degree, they're going to learn, they're going to grow. And yes, then we have to apply some logic and say, well, they probably won't get into that school, but they're more likely to get into this one because there are so many schools. And the idea of they're going to get into the best school, you know, we've all been lulled into thinking that that's a ranking description,
right?
And U.S. News did not create their ranking system for your benefit or my benefit or our kids' benefits. They created it to remain relevant against Time and Newsweek in the 80s.
Right.
And, you know, they're it's not an optimized system where we say, okay, you should want to get into the highest ranked school. It doesn't really matter how these schools are ranked to each other. It only matters how it's ranked in terms of its fit and benefit for you. I wrote an op-ed recently about U.S. News kind of ranking system. And it's not about news, but just, it's like, do you buy your pants based on how well ranked they are
to
each other? Oh, well, my pants are higher rated than yours. Like, who cares, right? They only matters if your pants fit.
Fit, yeah.
And that is the same way we should be thinking about colleges. How well does that fit me over the long term?
I think that is where it's more complex and qualitative, right? Because the reason why this quantitative analysis like US News ranking or SAT score ranges or acceptance rates are good to look at is because it gives you some quantitative analysis to say, this is higher or this is lower, this is that, this is this. But when it gets to qualitative rankings, like you talked about saying, you know, are they a good fit for me based on my socioeconomic group? Are they good fit for me based on my extracurricular activities? Are they good fit for me based on, I don't know, I like eating pizza. Like,
well, the phrase I hear all the time from students and their families, I'm just trying to find my people. Right. And I'm trying to find my people in and out of the classroom. And I would challenge actually the idea that has to be a fundamentally qualitative exercise.
Yeah, please challenge me.
Yeah, because I think that the data science that drives that Spotify algorithm that says that Kieran has a listening pattern of this and has given a thumbs up to the following songs, and people who also thumbed up that song have also liked this one. So let's put that one in there and see how he likes it. That's a very data-driven quantitative process.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have these large pools of experienced users at schools called graduates, we're able to actually mine that data in a very quantitative way and say that from a social culture perspective and an academic culture perspective, you are over-indexing as someone, as a learner and as a community member who would enjoy the same set of conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you look at the data about what enrollment officers pay attention to, understandably, it is data around academic aptitude. It's GPA, it's transcript depth, it is test scores when they're available. Those things are what enrollment officers will tell you they rely on most in their decision-making process. And one of the things that Trove is trying to do is actually introduce a similar sort of GPA metric, data-driven metric on social culture fit based on these large sample sizes and a little bit of data science and AI to say, this is someone who would thrive in your culture. As you know, as when we started this process, we hired some industrial psychologists and they looked at this and they said, we're looking for psychological safety, right? We all are looking for that place where if you think of the analogy of the tortoise and they're going to stick their head out of their shell when they feel the environment is safe for them. That's what we're looking for, is a set of conditions where as a student and out of the classroom as a community member, you're going to pick your head out of your shell and say, I found my people, right? This is comfortable for me. I feel good. I can express myself the way I uniquely express myself because this is a comfortable, safe environment for me. And we have the data science available and the data sets available to establish that link and then do that again at the front of the process so that, you know, your son and everyone's sons and daughters can upfront say, let me see if I can find the schools where I'm going to be comfortable and then get to know them, because those are the best schools. I don't care right. what the ranking is. Those are the best schools, because that will make me the best version of me.
That's amazing. Because so this is very similar to how Amazon ranks, saying if you're, for example, let's, you know, I recently moved to a new house. So I was looking at, you know, getting all new things, including spoons and everything. So the point is, when I got this new silicone cutlery, they're like 95% of people who bought this also bought this. Wow. And I was like, yeah, this is spot on based on other things you have done. So what you're describing is very similar to that, saying 95% of people that like basketball, like rap music, and I don't know, cotton clothes, have liked Oglethorpe University. I'm just throwing some name in there.
It's a good Atlanta reference.
Right. And, so is that the idea here?
Yeah, it's generally the idea, because, you know, if you ask a student today through the matching that we do today through a couple of, you know, nice websites, nice services, we tend to ask teenagers, do you want a big school or a small school, a city school or a country school? And they just don't know that. I've interviewed personally students who go to 100 person rural high schools in North Dakota and 8,000 student high schools in New York City. And you ask those two kids, do you want a big, you know, a city school or a country school? I guarantee you the kid in rural North Dakota is thinking about North Dakota State University in Fargo. That's the city school.
Right.
The kid in Brooklyn is not thinking that Fargo is a city. And so you just can't sure. get asking teenagers those generic questions.
And so where do the acceptance criteria fit in? Like when, so let's say you fill in all this match.com profile, right? Or eHarmony profile, I guess, similar to that, right? You put in all these qualifiers and you ask them, what is your SAT score, ACT score, and GPAs as well, so that you match them with the schools that fit the acceptance criteria, or is that a different process?
No, it's part of the same process. So your academic aptitude is absolutely an essential part of your comfort level in the classroom and in the community, right? If you feel like you're over your head and you are drowning and you're working way harder than you should have to just to keep up, that's not gonna last, right? You won't persist in that environment. And so we definitely factor in academic aptitude into our matching criteria, but how a student learns and how a school likes to teach are also essential parts that I think are missing in the process right now. You know, just being able to perform on a test doesn't mean that you are really going to resonate with the pedagogy of a certain school. And so understanding about study abroad and group study and you know, working in internships and those types of things and what interests you. And you may not know as a teenager or as a younger person applying, because there are a lot of adult learners that may not be articulate in this as well. But if we can ask a series of questions about the conditions that make you want to pick your head out of your shell in and out of the classroom, that's the goal of what Trube is trying to do, and not come right at it and say, big school, small school, city school, country school, because that's how we're in the mess we're in now. Is we're trusting that there is a self-awareness level in teenagers that's just not going to happen. And so can we just think about what turns you on and turns you off? And you mentioned the dating apps. We actually did a lot of research on dating apps, and eHarmony is an interesting example. More recently than eHarmony, Hinge is one of the popular dating apps today. And their slogan, tagline, is designed to be deleted.
Right.
Right. So they want you to come and find someone and then be off the dating app. And eHarmony's magic was that they would actually give you a survey up front and then only ever show you the profiles of people with whom that they had assessed you had a long-term potential relationship. And with millions of users, they found out through their research that the divorce rate for people who had met through that methodology had a divorce rate of 3.9%. So that's more than an order of magnitude improvement just by moving the compatibility survey up front.
Right.
And by having the goal isn't a first date, the goal is marriage. Right. And that analogy holds so true in college, because teenagers and their families tend to view this as getting a first date. That's the application. Can I get the date? And the school is turning around saying, will you marry me forever? like in a mafia kind of like
at least for 4 years. Yeah.
Well, no. But that's the beauty of this is, I mean, look at the business model of most colleges today. I'm going to sell you a 4-year degree for X price, and then I'm going to chase you for the rest of your life to give me money for nothing.
Right.
That's a silly business model. Whereas today, I think we have the potential to have these lifelong learning relationships where we are all, you know, sort of learners who are discovering crypto and what's going on in Ukraine. And I have to retrain for a new career. And I want to learn photography, digital photography. And there's so many things you want to learn throughout the course of your life. What if your undergraduate university was the center, your first thought about education for 80 years or 60 years or however long you get? If that was the case, then you have to start with that really strong bond of compatibility. You have to find your people. And then that creates a lifetime learning opportunity and value opportunity for you as a student and for the school to bring you in and say, we're gonna be together for the long haul and
yeah,
the value for you.
Well, that definitely sounds very promising. Talk to me about your success stories so far. When did you start True? How many students are on the platform? Because, you know, again, going back to this matching algorithm logic, you know, Match.com or Hinge or even eHarmony, their platform can have the best algorithm, but it is only as good as the number of people that went through the platform. So that it becomes, the AI becomes useful based on the number of users, right? So talk to me about True. When did you start the platform? How many applicants went through the platform? And what is your success metric like?
Yeah. So I started this, I like to think of it as the day before COVID. My first day full-time working on this was February 10th of 2020. February 11th, 2020, they named it COVID-19. We spent about a year just sort of trying to really resolve what's the business model, what's exactly the technology, what's the problem we're trying to solve, and this idea of getting out and not getting in and those things. And then we raised money, we built a beta, we beta tested that with three schools in Western New York, with RIT, St. Bonaventure's, and SUNY Geneseo. And the last enrollment cycle, the 2022 the cycle that ended in 2022, in the summer of 2022. And then sort of have pivoted in the last couple of months to commercial sales. So the way to think about Truve is it is a two-sided platform that is for both students and schools. We have built our platform on Peterson's data. So we have data for over 4,000 schools. So the student experience on the Truve.me platform, they go in, they take a 10-minute survey, and they can get matched with any one of, you know, 4,000 schools in the platform. And that is all free to the students and their families. The monetization for us comes on the B2B side, the school side. Schools mm-hmm. are collectively out there spending billions of dollars per year trying to reach these students, marketing to these students, buying lists of students to market to. So that's where we operate. And so we are not building our business by trying to build a consumer brand and trying to generate millions of users onto the platform ourselves that we can then turn around and market to schools. We're instead going selectively to schools and saying, we have the opportunity to figure out with you, use our data science technology to quickly assess what we refer to as your digital DNA, your academic and social culture, through the lens of your recent graduates and current students. Once we do that, we then give the schools a license to use that matching technology, that survey technology, to push it out to the hundreds of thousands of students in their CRM system so that they can then have their students clicking on it saying, oh, let me find out if I'm a good fit for Oglethorpe. Click on this, take the Truve survey, and then find out where the right schools are. And if you're not, you know, if you came through Oglethorpe and you're not a great fit for Oglethorpe, that's okay. Oglethorpe should want to know that sooner in the process instead of continuing to chase you.
Mm-hmm.
And most schools are probably, their marketing is 95-98% inefficient. They just never
get it.
So we're trying to push that and make their marketing investments more efficient. But this is a B2B tool. In the beta test, you know, we had over 100,000 students come to the platform. And interestingly, we had students from 183 different countries register for the software.
That's amazing.
And that was despite my best effort to prevent that. we had a limited pool of marketing dollars, and we invested only, it was social media marketing. It was only US specific. I think mm-hmm. we did a job on the SEO. So we managed to get a lot of students around the world saying, you know, best school for me, best fit for me, best US college for me. Mm-hmm. And so we saw just this huge spike of interest from all over the world about kids trying to find the right school for them in the US.
Sure. Well, all glory to you. I like the idea that students don't have to pay anything, and you're helping colleges select better student pool for them, not only to get admitted, but also to be enrolled and ultimately graduate. So all of this sounds really exciting. Let's talk about you, because I love this story of you being an innovator, working on everything from toothpicks to washing machines, now switching your focus to radically disrupting admissions process. What drives you, and what made you choose this path? If you can spell it out a little bit more, I would love to hear the story.
Sure. Yeah. So I worked in admissions offices all the way through business school. So at Northwestern, when I was in business school, I was on the admissions committee. So I was reading files and voting. I was very involved and I was interested in it. Then I went away into my career and chose not to work at admissions, and worked in product development roles, like you said, from toothpicks to turbines, with washing machines in between. And that's really kind of how my brain works. I look at problems and I say, from a 50,000 foot view, are the solutions that are being used today the right ones? Are there better ones? Is this a tweak? Is this a totally radical change? And that's just, that's how my brain works. And so coming back into the enrollment process with my children, it really got my brain kind of going that, hey, there's this problem. But it wasn't until I really saw that this problem is not an equally affected problem, that the problem is actually graduation, and that most schools are not Harvard. I mean, I was fortunate enough to go to some wonderful schools, and they have a different business model than where most of the market is. So the attention that drew my attention originally was this idea of getting into college is a really hard thing to do, and couldn't we create some cool technology to do that? Sure. But what actually ultimately drove me to find, so I really found this company, is the inequality in this system, that most schools are the have-not schools, and most students are, especially first-generation students and underrepresented minority students, that the level of affluence of the school and of the student and their family and the education level of their family directly affects not only your ability to get in, but your ability to get out. Mm-hmm. Technology is such a wonderful leveler of playing fields. And that's part of the ambition of Troop, is can we bring technology into the system in a way that helps level the playing field? So those students who struggle to get a guidance counselor who knows a lot about the subject matter, to help them? Can we find ways to connect them with people that can be role models to them in the process? You know, the average student to guidance counselor ratio in this country is about 475 to one. And so most students, especially ones whose parents didn't go to college who don't go to college or high schools that tend to send a lot of kids to college, they're just not getting great advice. They don't see themselves as college material. And so that's part of the mission of Troop, is can we help those people to see themselves in higher education? Because the outcome is so profound. If for the average person who has a college degree versus someone who hasn't finished high school, you live 15 or 17 years longer. You have obviously a higher income, but you have lower incidence of just about every type of disease. So can we help pull that through? That's the real driving motivation. For true, for sure.
I agree. I mean, I think college is definitely the single most driver for upward socioeconomic mobility. There's no question. You'll get a better job, you'll get a better house, you'll have a better car.
It's not the stuff you're going to get. It's that sense of living your life to its fullest and learning and growing and seeing yourself as I belong,
right,
on my journey. I'm not relegated. You know, that's just the American dream, right? Is I can be anything I want to be. And my message is that doesn't have to go through the Ivy League.
I agree.
So many great schools out there. You just have to find the one that fits you, that's the best for you, and that opportunity is going to open every door in your life.
I totally agree. I think in addition to this upward social mobility, the big part is you're more tolerant, you're more content, you're less jealous. Like there's a lot of things that will come about because you are more understanding of different cultures and languages.
To give more back to society.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, let's kind of start wrapping this episode up. We all agree that higher education is amazing and the fact that it is critical for anybody's growth to pursue the education to the best of his or her capabilities as possible. But we also agree that higher education has not changed much over the last 400 years, like you talked about with Harvard. Where do you see higher education going because of innovations like what you've done with TRUE? Can you paint me like a crystal ball or even a pie in the sky on where you want higher education to go as a result of all the cool things like AI, virtual bots, and other technologies?
Yeah. So if you couldn't guess thus far, I'm a pretty sort of glass half full positive person, right? And so I look at all these new technologies and all the digital learning and all the VR stuff, that everything that is coming our way, and I think that rate of change is only going to accelerate, that actually creates incredible opportunity. And it necessitates that we change the role, the business model of higher education from selling bachelor's degrees and then, like I said, chasing somebody for the rest of their life to donate for sort of nothing, if you will. That if we can change that role model to say, we would like to become your steward along this journey, we're going to become your lifelong learning partner, that then says, how many technologies can we as a school bring on? How many different ways can we distribute and share information? How many ways can we teach you and learn from you? And the fluidity that comes from technology in terms of the sort of the bi-directional flow of experience. And if you can learn from your classmates and learn from your fellow alums, learn from professors, have those relationships, that there is sort of this endless possibility, and we can become so much more connected and stay so much more connected to our schools. You know, the data would suggest that today, the alumni engagement rate is under 10%. It's 5 to 10% at most schools, and the engagement might be clicking a like on a Facebook alumni group page. It's really not profound. I think there is a huge opportunity for people to get much more engaged with their schools and make that their go-to learning relationship for a lifetime. And that all has to start from feeling that sense of connection to the community. But once you get there, and once you start to see yourself that way as not selling a four-year degree and then moving on, but selling a lifetime learning relationship, it's just incredible possibilities out there.
Sure. Well, that sounds great. And I cannot be more excited about the future, especially with technologies like TRUE and all the innovators like you bringing their best of breed knowledge and innovative skills and disruption skills to higher education. That's the only way we can move higher education forward. Dave, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's been an incredible honor to talk to you. And I wish you nothing but perfect luck and great success with TRUE and any other innovation you're going to take on for generations to come.
Well, thank you so much, Kieran. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Listeners, we'll post the show notes with the links to TRUE and also Dave's profile and other links as well. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Everything is a service. Whether it's finding ways to help students reach their goals within higher education, sharing medical records to patients quickly and securely, informing residential customers of an impending outage, or communicating with remote satellites thousands of miles apart. All of it requires data, integration, and communication. At End2End, we provide services that make all of these possibilities realities. And we make it faster, simpler, secure, and easier. Because we believe everything is a service, and bringing everything together is how we can help you innovate and change the world.